"We've come over the heather," he said. The other rabbit made no reply, but his look was not that of an enemy. His demeanour had a kind of melancholy which was perplexing. "Do you live here?" asked Hazel, after a pause. "Yes," replied the other rabbit, and then added, "We saw you come." "We mean to live here too," said Hazel firmly. The other rabbit showed no concern. He paused, then answered, "Why not? We supposed you would, but I don't think there are enough of you, are there, to live very comfortably on your own?" Hazel felt puzzled. Apparently the stranger was not worried by the news that they meant to stay. How big was his warren? Where was it? How many rabbits were concealed in the copse and watching them now? Were they likely to be attacked? The stranger's manner told nothing. He seemed detached, almost bored, but perfectly friendly. His lassitude, his great size and beautiful, well-groomed appearance, his unhurried air of having all he wanted and of being unaffected by the newcomers one way or the other, all these presented Hazel with a problem unlike anything he had had to deal with before. If there was some kind of trick, he had no idea what it might be. He decided that he himself, at any rate, would be perfectly candid and plain. "There are enough of us to protect ourselves," he said. "We don't want to make enemies, but if we meet with any kind of interference..." The other interrupted smoothly.
"Don't get upset. You're all very welcome. If you're going back now, I'll come over with you. That is, unless you have any objection."
He set off down the slope. Hazel and Blackberry, after looking at each other for a moment, caught him up and went beside him. He moved easily without haste, and showed less caution than they in crossing the field. Hazel felt more mystified than ever. The other rabbit evidently had no fear that they might set upon him, chair to one, and kill him. He was ready to go alone among a crowd of suspicious strangers, but what he stood to gain from this risk it was impossible to guess. Perhaps, thought Hazel wryly, teeth and claws would make no impression on that great firm body and shining pelt. When they reached the ditch, all the other rabbits were squatting together, watching their approach. Hazel stopped in front of them, but did not know what to say. If the stranger had not been there, he would have given them an account of what had happened. If Blackberry and he had driven the stranger across the field by force, he could have handed him over for safekeeping to Bigwig or Silver. But to have him sitting beside him, looking his followers over in silence and courteously waiting for someone else to speak first, this was a situation beyond Hazel's experience. It was Bigwig, straightforward and blunt as always, who broke the tension.
"Who is this, Hazel?" he said. "Why has he come back with you?"
"I don't know," answered Hazel, trying to look frank and feeling foolish. "He came of his own accord."
"Well, we'd better ask him then," said Bigwig, with something like a sneer. He came close to the stranger and sniffed as Hazel had done. He too was evidently affected by the peculiar smell of prosperity, for he paused as though in uncertainty. Then with a rough, abrupt air he said, "Who are you, and what do you want?"
"My name is Cowslip," said the other. "I don't want anything. I hear you've come a long way."
"Perhaps we have," said Bigwig. "We know how to defend ourselves too."
"I'm sure you do," said Cowslip, looking round at the mud-stained, bedraggled rabbits with an air of being too polite to comment. "But it can be hard to defend oneself against the weather. There's going to be rain, and I don't think your scrapes are finished."
He looked at Bigwig, as though waiting for him to ask another question. Bigwig seemed confused. Clearly he could make no more of the situation than Hazel. There was silence except for the sound of the rising wind. Above them, the branches of the oak tree were beginning to creak and sway. Suddenly, Fiver came forward.
"We don't understand you," he said. "It's best to say so and try to get things clear. Can we trust you? Are there many other rabbits here? Those are the things we want to know."
Cowslip showed no more concern at Fiver's tense manner than he had at anything that had gone before. He drew a forepaw down the back of one ear and then replied,
"I think you're puzzling yourselves unnecessarily. But if you want the answers to your questions, then I'd say yes, you can trust us. We don't want to drive you away. And there is a warren here, but not as big a one as we should like. Why should we want to hurt you? There's plenty of grass, surely."
In spite of his strange, clouded manner, he spoke so reasonably that Hazel felt rather ashamed.
"We've been through a lot of danger," he said. "Everything new seems like danger to us. After all, you might be afraid that we were coming to take your does or turn you out of your holes."
Cowslip listened gravely. Then he answered,
"Well, as to holes, that was something I thought I might mention. These scrapes aren't very deep or comfortable, are they? And although they're facing out of the wind now, you ought to know that this isn't the usual wind we get here. It's blowing up this rain from the south. We usually have a west wind, and it'll go straight into these holes. There are plenty of empty burrows in our warren, and if you want to come across, you'll be welcome. Now, if you'll excuse me, I won't stay any longer. I hate the rain. The warren is round the corner of the wood opposite."
He ran down the slope and over the brook. They watched him leap the bank of the further copse and disappear through the green bracken. The first scatters of rain were beginning to fall, pattering into the oak leaves and pricking the bare pink skin inside their ears.
"Fine big fellow, isn't he?" said Buckthorn. "He doesn't look as though he had much to bother about living here." "What should we do, Hazel, do you think?" asked Silver. "It's true what he said, isn't he? These scrapes, well, we can crouch in them out of the weather, but no more than that. And as we can't all get into one, we shall have to split up."
"We'll join them together," said Hazel. "And while we're doing that, I'd like to talk about what he said. Fiver, Bigwig and Blackberry, can you come with me? The rest of you split how you like."
The new hole was short, narrow and rough. There was no room for two rabbits to pass. Four were like beans in a pod. For the first time, Hazel began to realize how much they had left behind. The holes and tunnels of an old warren become smooth, reassuring and comfortable with use. There are no snags or rough corners. Every length smells of rabbit, of that great indestructible flood of rabbitry in which each one is carried along, sure-footed and safe. The heavy work has all been done by countless great-grandmothers and their mates. All the faults have been put right, and everything in use is of proved value. The rain drains easily, and even the wind of midwinter cannot penetrate the deeper burrows. Not one of Hazel's rabbits had ever played any part in real digging. The work they had done that morning was trifling, and all they had to show for it was rough shelter and little comfort. There is nothing like bad weather to reveal the shortcomings of a dwelling, particularly if it is too small. You are, as they say, stuck with it, and have leisure to feel all its peculiar irritations and discomforts. Bigwig, with his usual brisk energy, set to work. Hazel, however, returned and sat pensive at the lip of the hole, looking out at the silent, rippling veils of rain that drifted across and across the little valley between the two copses. Closer, before his nose, every blade of grass, every bracken frond, was bent, dripping, and glistening. The smell of last year's oak leaves filled the air. It had turned chilly. Across the field, the bloom of the cherry tree under which they had sat that morning hung sodden and spoiled. While Hazel gazed, the wind slowly veered round into the west, as Cowslip had said it would, and brought the rain driving into the mouth of the hole. He backed down and rejoined the others. The pattering and whispering of the rain sounded softly but distinctly outside. The fields and woods were shut in under it, emptied and subdued. The insect life of the leaves and grass was stilled. The thrush should have been singing, but Hazel could hear no thrush. He and his companions were a muddy handful of scratchers, crouching in a narrow, draughty pit in lonely country. They were not out of the weather. They were waiting, uncomfortably, for the weather to change. "Blackberry," said Hazel, "what did you think of our visitor, and how would you like to go to his warren?"
"Well," replied Blackberry, "what I think is this. There's no way of finding out whether he's to be trusted except to try it. He seemed friendly, but then, if the little rabbits were afraid of some newcomers and wanted to deceive them, get them down a hole and attack them, they'd start, wouldn't they, by sending someone who was plausible. They might want to kill us, but then again, as he said, there's plenty of grass, and as for turning them out or taking their does, if they're all up to his size and weight, they've nothing to fear from a crowd like us. But then again, as he said, there's plenty of grass, and as for turning them out or taking their does, if they're all up to his size and weight, they've nothing to fear from a crowd like us. They must have seen us come. We were tired. Surely that was the time to attack us, or while we were separated, before we began digging. But they didn't. I reckon they're more likely to be friendly than otherwise. There's only one thing beats me. What do they stand to get from asking us to join their warren?"
"Fools attract Elo by being easy prey," said Bigwig, cleaning the mud out of his whiskers and blowing through his long front teeth. "And we're fools until we've learned to live here. Safer to teach us, perhaps. I don't know. Give it up. But I'm not afraid to go and find out. If they do try any tricks, they'll find I know a few as well. I wouldn't mind taking a chance to sleep somewhere more comfortable than this. We haven't slept since yesterday afternoon."
"Fiver, I think we ought to have nothing to do with that rabbit or his warren. We ought to leave this place at once. What's the good of talking?"
Cold and damp, Hazel felt impatient. He had always been accustomed to rely on Fiver, and now, when he really needed him, he was letting them down. Blackberry's reasoning had been first-rate, and Bigwig had at least shown which way any sound-hearted rabbit would be likely to lean. Apparently the only contribution Fiver could make was this beetle-spirited vaporing. He tried to remember that Fiver was undersized, and that they had had an anxious time and were all weary. At this moment, the soil at the far end of the burrow began to crumble inward. Then it fell away, and Silver's head and front paws appeared.
"Here we are," said Silver cheerfully. "We've done what you wanted, Hazel, and Buckthorn's through next door. But what I'd like to know is, how about what's his name? Cowslip. Are we going to his warren or not? Surely we're not going to sit cowering in this place because we're frightened to go and see him. Whatever will he think of us?"
"I'll tell you," said Dandelion from over his shoulder. "If he's not honest, he'll know we're afraid to come, and if he is, he'll think we're suspicious, cowardly skulkers. If we're going to live in these fields, we'll have to get on terms with his lot sooner or later, and it goes against the grain to hang about and admit we daren't visit them."
"I don't know how many of them there are," said Silver, "but we're quite a crowd. Anyhow, I hate the idea of just keeping away. How long have rabbits been ill? Old Cowslip wasn't afraid to come into the middle of us, was he?"
"Very well," said Hazel. "That's how I feel myself. I just wanted to know whether you did. Would you like Bigwig and me to go over there first by ourselves and report back?"
"No," said Silver. "Let's all go. If we're going at all, for Frith's sake, let's do it as though we weren't afraid. What do you say, Dandelion?"
"I think you're right."
"Then we'll go now," said Hazel. "Get the others and follow me."
Outside, in the thickening light of the late afternoon, with the rain trickling into his eyes and under his scut, he watched them as they joined him. Blackberry, alert and intelligent, looking first up and then down the ditch before he crossed it. Bigwig, cheerful at the prospect of action. The steady, reliable Silver. Dandelion, the dashing storyteller, so eager to be off that he jumped the ditch and ran a little way into the field before stopping to wait for the rest. Pipkin, who looked round for Hazel and then came over to wait beside him. Acorn, Hawkbit, and Speedwell, decent enough rank and filers, as long as they were not pushed beyond their limits. Last of all came Fiver, dejected and reluctant as a sparrow in the frost. As Hazel turned from the hole, the clouds in the west broke slightly, and there was a sudden dazzle of watery pale gold light.
"Oh, Elevera," thought Hazel, "these are rabbits we're going to meet. You know them as well as you know us. Let it be the right thing that I'm doing."
"Now brace up, Fiver," he said aloud. "We're waiting for you, and getting wetter every moment."
A soaking bumblebee crawled over a thistle bloom, vibrated its wings for a few seconds, and then flew away down the field. Hazel followed, leaving a dark track behind him over the silvered grass. Chapter 13. Hospitality. In the afternoon they came unto a land, in which it seemed always afternoon, or round the coast the languid air did swoon, breathing like one that hath a weary dream. Tennyson, The Lotus Eaters. The corner of the opposite wood turned out to be an acute point. Beyond it the ditch and trees curved back again, in a re-entrant, so that the field formed a bay with a bank running all the way round. It was evident now why Cowslip, when he left them, had gone among the trees. He had simply run in a direct line from their holes to his own, passing on his way through the narrow strip of woodland that lay between. Indeed, as Hazel turned the point and stopped to look about him, he could see the place where Cowslip must have come out. A clear rabbit track led from the bracken under the fence and into the field. In the bank on the further side of the bay, the rabbit holes were plain to see, showing dark and distinct in the bare ground. It was as conspicuous a warren as could well be imagined.
"Sky above us," said Bigwig. "Every living creature for miles must know that's there. Look at all the tracks in the grass, too. Do you think they sing in the morning like the thrushes?"
"Perhaps they're too secure to bother about concealing themselves," said Blackberry. "After all, the home warren was fairly plain to be seen."
"Yes, but not like that. A couple of Hrudadil could go down some of those holes."
"So could I," said Dandelion. "I'm getting dreadfully wet." As they approached, a big rabbit appeared over the edge of the ditch, looked at them quickly, and vanished into the bank. A few moments later, two others came out and waited for them. They, too, were sleek and unusually large.
"A rabbit called Cowslip offered us shelter here," said Hazel. "Perhaps you know that he came to see us."
Both rabbits together made a curious dancing movement of the head and front paws. Apart from sniffing, as Hazel and Cowslip had done when they met, formal gestures, except between mating rabbits, were unknown to Hazel and his companions. They felt mystified and slightly ill at ease. The dancers paused, evidently waiting for some acknowledgement or reciprocal gesture, but there was none.
"Cowslip is in the great burrow," said one of them at length. "Would you like to follow us there?"
"How many of us?"
asked Hazel.
"Why, all of you," answered the other, surprised. "You don't want to stay out in the rain, do you?"
Hazel had supposed that he and one or two of his comrades would be taken to see the chief rabbit, who would probably not be Cowslip, since Cowslip had come to see them unattended, in his burrow, after which they would all be given different places to go to. It was this separation of which he had been afraid. He now realized with astonishment that there was apparently a part of the warren underground which was big enough to contain them all together. He felt so curious to visit it that he did not stop to make any detailed arrangements about the order in which they should go down. However, he put Pipkin immediately behind him.
"It'll warm his little heart for once," he thought, "and if the leaders do get attacked, I suppose we can spare him easier than some."
Bigwig, he asked to bring up the rear.
"If there's any trouble, get out of it," he said, "and take as many as you can with you."
Then He followed their guides into one of the holes in the bank. The run was broad, smooth, and dry. It was obviously a highway, for other runs branched off it in all directions. The rabbits in front went fast, and Hazen had little time to sniff about as he followed. Suddenly he checked. He'd come into an open place. His whiskers could feel no earth in front, and none was near his sides. There was a good deal of air ahead of him. He could feel it moving, and there was a considerable space above his head. Also, there were several rabbits near him. It had not occurred to him that there would be a place underground where he would be exposed on three sides. He backed quickly and felt Pipkin at his tail. What a fool I was, he thought. Why didn't I put Silver there? At this moment, he heard Cowslip speaking. He jumped, for he could tell that he was some way away. The size of the place must be immense.
Is that you, Hazel? Said Cowslip. You're welcome, and so are your friends. We're glad you've come.
No human beings, except the courageous and experienced blind, are able to sense much in a strange place where they cannot see. But with rabbits, it is otherwise. They spend half their lives underground, in darkness or near darkness, and touch, smell, and hearing convey as much or more to them than sight. Hazel now had the clearest knowledge of where he was. He would have recognized the place if he had left at once and come back 6 months later. He was at one end of the largest burrow he had ever been in, sandy, warm and dry, with a hard, bare floor. There were several tree roots running across the roof, and it was these that supported the unusual span. There was a great number of rabbits in the place, many more than he was bringing. All had the same rich, opulent smell as Cowslip. Cowslip himself was at the other end of the hall, and Hazel realized that he was waiting for him to reply. His own companions were still coming out of the entrance burrow one by one, and there was a good deal of scrabbling and shuffling. He wondered if he ought to be very formal. Whether or not he could call himself a chief rabbit, he had had no experience of this sort of thing. The Threera would no doubt have risen to the occasion perfectly. He did not want to appear at a loss or to let his followers down. He decided that it would be best to be plain and friendly. After all, there would be plenty of time as they settled down in the warren to show these strangers that they were as good as themselves, without risking trouble by putting on airs at the start.
"We are glad to be out of the bad weather," he said. "We're like all rabbits. Happiest in a crowd. When you came over to see us in the field, Cowslip, you said your warren wasn't large, but judging by the holes we saw along the bank, it must be what we'd reckon a fine, big one."
As he finished, he sensed that Bigwig had just entered the hall and knew that they were all together again. The stranger rabbit seemed slightly disconnected by his little speech, and he felt that for some reason or other, he'd not struck the right note in complimenting them on their numbers. Perhaps there were not very many of them after all. Had there been disease? There was no smell or sign of it. These were the biggest and healthiest rabbits he'd ever met. Perhaps their fidgeting in silence had nothing to do with what he had said. Perhaps it was simply that he had not spoken very well, being new to it, and they felt that he was not up to their fine ways.
"Never mind," he thought. "After last night, I'm sure of my own lot. We wouldn't be here at all if we weren't handy in a pinch. These other fellows will just have to get to know us. They don't seem to dislike us anyway."
There were no more speeches. Rabbits have their own conventions and formalities, but these are few and short by human standards. If Hazel had been a human being, he would have been expected to introduce his companions one by one, and no doubt each would have been taken in charge as a guest by one of their hosts. In the great burrow, however, things happened differently. The rabbits mingled naturally. They did not talk for talking's sake in the artificial manner that human beings, and sometimes even their dogs and cats, do. But this did not mean that they were not communicating, merely that they were not communicating by talking. All over the burrow, both the newcomers and those who were at home were accustoming themselves to each other in their own way and their own time. Getting to know what the strangers smelled like, how they moved, how they breathed, how they scratched, the feel of their rhythms and pulses. These were their topics and subjects of discussion, carried on without the need of speech. To a greater extent than a human in a similar gathering, each rabbit, as he pursued his own fragment, was sensitive to the trend of the whole. After a time, all knew that the concourse was not going to turn sour or break up in a fight. Just as a battle begins, in a state of equilibrium between the two sides, which gradually alters one way or the other, until it is clear that the balance has tilted so far that the issue can no longer be in doubt. So this gathering of rabbits in the dark, beginning with hesitant approaches, silences, pauses, movements, crouching side by side, and all manner of tentative appraisals, slowly moved, like a hemisphere of the world into summer, to a warmer, brighter region of mutual liking and approval, until all felt sure that they had nothing to fear. Pipkin, some way away from Hazel, crouched at his ease between two huge rabbits who could have broken his back in a second, while Buckthorn and Cowslip started a playful scuffle, nipping each other like kittens, and then breaking off to comb their ears in a comical pretense of sudden gravity. Only Fiver sat alone and apart. He seemed either ill or very much depressed, and the strangers avoided him instinctively. The knowledge that the gathering was safely round the corner came to Hazel in the form of a recollection of Silver's head and paws breaking through gravel. At once he felt warm and relaxed. He had already crossed the whole length of the hall and was pressed close to two rabbits, a buck and a doe, each of whom was fully as large as Cowslip. When both together took a few slow hops down one of the runs nearby, Hazel followed, and little by little they all three moved out of the hall. They came to a smaller burrow, deeper underground. Evidently this belonged to the couple, for they settled down as though at home and made no objection when Hazel did the same. Here, while the mood of the great hall slowly passed from them, all three were silent for a time. "Is Cowslip the chief rabbit?" asked Hazel at length. The other replied with a question. "Are you called chief rabbit?" Hazel found this awkward to answer. If he replied that he was, his new friends might address him so for the future, and he could imagine what Bigwig and Silver would have to say about that. As usual, he fell back on plain honesty. "We're only a few," he said. "We left our warren in a hurry to escape from bad things. Most stayed behind, and the chief rabbit was one of them. I've been trying to lead my friends, but I don't know whether they'd care to hear me called chief rabbit. That'll make them ask a few questions," he thought. "Why did you leave? Why didn't the rest come? What were you afraid of? And whatever am I going to say?" When the other rabbit spoke, however, it was clear that either he had no interest in what Hazel had said, or else he had some other reason for not questioning him. "We don't call anyone chief rabbit," he said. "It was Cowslip's idea to go and see you this afternoon, so he was the one who went."
"But who decides what to do about Elil, and digging, and sending out scouting parties and so on?"
"Oh, we never do anything like that. Elil keep away from here. There was a Homba last winter, but the man who comes through the fields, he shot it with his gun." Hazel stared.
"But men won't shoot a Homba."
"Well, he killed this one anyway. He kills owls too. We never need to dig. No one's dug in my lifetime. A lot of the burrows are lying empty, you know. Rats live in one part, but the man kills them as well, when he can. We don't need expeditions. There's better food here than anywhere else. Your friends will be happy living here."
But he himself did not sound particularly happy, and once again Hazel felt oddly perplexed.
"Where does the man,"
he began, but he was interrupted. I'm called Strawberry. This is my doe, Nildrohane. Some of the best empty burrows are quite close. I'll show you, in case your friends want to settle into them. The Great Burrow is a splendid place, don't you think? I'm sure there can't be many warrens, but all the rabbits can meet together underground. The roof's all tree roots, you know. And of course the tree outside keeps the rain from coming through. It's a wonder the tree's alive, but it is.
Hazel suspected that Strawberry's talking had the real purpose of preventing his own questions. He was partly irritated and partly mystified.
Never mind, he thought. If we all get as big as these chaps, we shall do pretty well. There must be some good food round here somewhere. His doe's a beautiful creature, too. Perhaps there are some more like her in the warren.
Strawberry moved out of the burrow and Hazel followed him into another run, leading deeper down below the wood. It was certainly a warren to admire. Sometimes when they crossed a run that led upward to a hole, he could hear the rain outside, still falling in the night. But although it had now been raining for several hours, there was not the least damp or cold either in the deep runs or in the many burrows that they passed. Both the drainage and the ventilation were better than he had been accustomed to. Here and there, other rabbits were on the move. Once they came upon Acorn, who was evidently being taken on a tour of the same kind.
"Very friendly, aren't they?" he said to Hazel as they passed one another. "I never dreamed we'd reach a place like this. You've got wonderful judgment, Hazel."
Strawberry waited politely for him to finish speaking, and Hazel could not help feeling pleased that he must have heard. At last, after skirting carefully round some openings from which there was a distinct smell of rats, they halted in a kind of pit. A steep tunnel led up into the air. Rabbit runs tend to be bow-shaped, but this was straight, so that above them, through the mouth of the hole, Hazel could see leaves against the night sky. He realized that one wall of the pit was convex and made of some hard substance. He sniffed at it uncertainly.
"Don't you know what those are?" said Strawberry. "They're bricks. The stones that men make their houses and barns out of. There used to be a well here long ago, but it's filled up now. The men don't use it anymore. That's the outer side of the well shaft. And this earth wall here is completely flat because of some man-thing fixed behind it in the ground, but I'm not sure what."
"There's something stuck on it," said Hazel. "Why, there's stones pushed into the surface. But what for?"
"Do you like it?" asked Strawberry.
Hazel puzzled over the stones. They were all the same size and pushed at regular intervals into the soil.
He could make nothing of them.
"What are they for?"
he asked again.
"It's Elevera," said Strawberry. "A rabbit called Laburnum did it some time ago now. We have others, but this is the best. Worth a visit, don't you think?"
Hazel was more at a loss than ever. He had never seen a laburnum, and was puzzled by the name, which in Lapine is poison tree. How could a rabbit be called poison? And how could stones be Elevera? What exactly was it that Strawberry was saying was Elevera? In confusion, he said,
"I don't understand."
"It's what we call a shape," explained Strawberry. "Haven't you seen one before? The stones make the shape of Elevera on the wall, stealing the king's lettuce. You know."
Hazel had not felt so much bewildered since Blackberry had talked about the raft beside the Enbourne. Obviously, the stones could not possibly be anything to do with Elevera. It seemed to him that Strawberry might as well have said that his tail was an oak tree. He sniffed again, and then put a paw up to the wall.
"Steady, steady," said Strawberry. "You might damage it, and that wouldn't do. Never mind. We'll come again some other time."
"But where are—"
Hazel was beginning, when Strawberry once more interrupted him.
"I expect you'll be hungry now." "I know I am. It's going on raining all night. I'm certain of that. But we can feed underground here, you know. And then you can sleep in the great burrow, or in my place, if you prefer.
We can go back more quickly than we came. There's a run that goes almost straight. Actually, it passes across...
He chattered on relentlessly as they made their way back. It suddenly occurred to Hazel that these desperate interruptions seemed to follow any question beginning, where? He thought he would put this to the proof. After a while, Strawberry ended by saying,
We're nearly at the Great Burrow now, but we're coming in by a different way.
And where?
Said Hazel. Instantly, Strawberry turned into a side run and called, Kingcup, are you coming down to the Great Burrow?
There was silence.
That's odd, said Strawberry, returning and once more leading the way. He's generally there about this time. I often call for him, you know.
Hazel, hanging back, made a quick search with nose and whiskers. The threshold of the burrow was covered with a day-old fall of soft soil from the roof above. Strawberry's prints had marked it plainly, and there were no others whatsoever. Chapter 14. Like Trees in November. Courts and camps are the only places to learn the world in. Take the tone of the company that you are in. The Earl of Chesterfield, letters to his son. The Great Burrow was less crowded than when they had left it. Nildrohane was the first rabbit they met. She was among a group of three or four fine does who were talking quietly together and seemed to be feeding as well. There was a smell of green stuff. Evidently, some kind of food was available underground, like the Three Arrows lettuce. Hazel stopped to speak to Nildrohane. She asked whether he had gone as far as the well pit and the El Rera of Laburnum.
Yes, we did, said Hazel. It's something quite strange to me, I'm afraid, but I'd rather admire you and your friends than stones on a wall.
As he said this, he noticed that Cowslip had joined them and that Strawberry was talking to him quietly. He caught the words, never been near a shape, and a moment later Cowslip replied, Well, it makes no difference from our point of view. Hazel suddenly felt tired and depressed. He heard Blackberry behind Cowslip's sleek, heavy shoulder and went across to him.
Come out into the grass, he said quietly. Bring anyone else who'll come.
At that moment, Cowslip turned to him and said,
You'll be glad of something to eat now. I'll show you what we've got down here.
One or two of us are just going to Silfley, said Hazel.
Oh, it's still raining much too hard for that, said Cowslip,
as though there could be no two ways about it.
We'll feed you here.
I should be sorry to quarrel over it, said Hazel firmly, but some of us need to Silfley. We're used to it, and rain doesn't bother us.
Cowslip seemed to be taken aback for a moment. Then he laughed. The phenomenon of laughter is unknown to animals, though it is possible that dogs and elephants may have some inkling of it. The effect on Hazel and Blackberry was overwhelming. Hazel's first idea was that Cowslip was showing the symptom of some kind of disease. Blackberry clearly thought that he might be going to attack them and backed away. Cowslip said nothing, but his eerie laughter continued. Hazel and Blackberry turned and scuttled up the nearest run as though he had been a ferret. Halfway up, they met Pipkin, who was small enough first to let them pass and then to turn round and follow them. The rain was still falling steadily. The night was dark and for May cold. They all three hunched themselves in the grass and nibbled while the rain ran off their fur in streams.
My goodness, Hazel, said Blackberry. Did you really want to Silfley? This is terrible. I was just going to eat whatever it is they have, then go to sleep. What's the idea? I don't know, replied Hazel. I suddenly felt I had to get out and I wanted your company. I can see what's troubling Fiver, though he'll get over it, I dare say. There is something strange about these rabbits. Do you know they push stones into the wall? They do what?
Hazel explained. Blackberry was as much at a loss as he had been himself.
But I'll tell you another thing, he said. Bigwig wasn't so far wrong. They do sing like the birds. I was in a burrow belonging to a rabbit called Bettany. His doe has a litter, and she was making a noise over them, rather like a robin in autumn. To send them to sleep, she said. It made me feel queer, I can tell you.
And what do you think of them, Clairoux? Asked Hazel.
They're very nice and kind,
answered Pipkin.
But I'll tell you how they strike me. They all seem terribly sad. I can't think why, when they're so big and strong and have this beautiful warren. But they put me in mind of trees in November. I expect I'm being silly, though, Hazel. You brought us here, and I'm sure it must be a fine, safe place.
No, you're not being silly. I hadn't realised it, but you're perfectly right. They all seem to have something on their minds.
But after all, said Blackberry, we don't know why they're so few. They don't fill the warren anything like...
They don't fill the warren anything like. Perhaps they've had some sort of trouble that's left them sad.
We don't know because they don't tell us. But if we're going to stay here, we've got to learn to get on with them. We can't fight them. They're too big. And we don't want them fighting us.
I don't believe they can fight, Hazel, said Pipkin. Although they're so big, they don't seem like fighters to me. Not like Bigwig and Silver.
You notice a lot, don't you, Clairoux? Said Hazel. Do you notice it's raining harder than ever? I've got enough grass in my stomach for a bit. We'll go down again now, but let's keep to ourselves for a while.
Why not sleep?
Said Blackberry.
It's over a night and a day now, and I'm dropping.
They returned down a different hole and soon found a dry, empty burrow, where they curled up together and slept in the warmth of their own tired bodies. When Hazel woke, he perceived at once that it was morning, sometime after sunrise by the smell of it. The scent of apple blossom was plain enough. Then he picked up the fainter smells of buttercups and horses. Mingled with these came another. Although it made him uneasy, he could not tell for some moments what it was. A dangerous smell, an unpleasant smell, a totally unnatural smell, quite close outside. A smoke smell. Something was burning. Then he remembered how Bigwig, after his reconnaissance on the previous day, had spoken of the little white sticks in the grass. That was it. A man had been walking over the ground outside. That must have been what had awakened him. Hazel lay in the warm, dark burrow with a delightful sense of security. He could smell the man. The man could not smell him. All the man could smell was the nasty smoke he was making. He fell to thinking of the shape in the well pit, and then dropped into a drowsy half-dream, in which Elagera said that it was all a trick of his to disguise himself as Poison Tree and put the stones in the wall, to engage Strawberry's attention while he himself was getting acquainted with Nildrohane. Pipkin stirred and turned in his sleep, murmuring,
Sinlinan, Mali?
Is Groundsel nice, Mother? And Hazel, touched to think that he must be dreaming of old days, rolled over on his side to give him room to settle again. At that moment, however, he heard a rabbit approaching down some run close by. Whoever it was, he was calling and stamping as well, Hazel noticed, in an unnatural way. The sound, as Blackberry had said, was not unlike birdsong. As he came closer, Hazel could distinguish the word.
Flera! Flera!
The voice was Strawberry's. Pipkin and Blackberry were waking, more at the stamping than the voice, which was thin and novel, not striking through their sleep to any deep instinct. Hazel slipped out of the burrow, into the run, and at once came upon Strawberry busily thumping a hind leg on the hard earth floor.
My mother used to say, if you were a horse, the ceiling would fall down, said Hazel. Why do you stamp underground?
To wake everyone, answered Strawberry.
The rain went on nearly all night, you know. We generally sleep right through the early morning if it's rough weather, but it's turned fine now.
Why actually wake everybody, though?
Well, the man's gone by, and Cowslip and I thought the flay rat ought not to lie about for long. If we don't go and get it, the rats and rooks come, and I don't like fighting rats. I expect it's all in the day's work to an adventurous lot like you.
I don't understand.
Well, come along with me. I'm just going back along this run for Nildrohane. We haven't got a litter at present, you see, so she'll come out with the rest of us.
Other rabbits were making their way along the run, and Strawberry spoke to several of them, more than once remarking that he would enjoy taking their new friends across the field. Hazel began to realize that he liked Strawberry. On the previous day, he had been too tired and bewildered to size him up. But now that he'd had a good sleep, he could see that Strawberry was really a harmless, decent sort of fellow. He was touchingly devoted to the beautiful Nildrohane, and he evidently had moods of gaiety and a great capacity for enjoyment. As they came up into the May morning, he hopped over the ditch and skipped into the long grass as blithe as a squirrel. He seemed quite to have lost the preoccupied air that had troubled Hazel the night before. Hazel himself paused in the mouth of the hole, as he always had behind the bramble curtain at home, and looked out across the valley. The sun, risen behind the copse, threw long shadows from the trees southwestward across the field. The wet grass glittered, and nearby a nut tree sparkled iridescent, winking and gleaming as its branches moved in the light wind. The brook was swollen, and Hazel's ears could distinguish the deeper, smoother sound changed since the day before. Between the copse and the brook, the slope was covered with pale lilac lady smocks, each standing separately in the grass, a frail stalk of bloom above a spread of cressy leaves. The breeze dropped, and the little valley lay completely still, held in long beams of light and enclosed on either side by the lines of the woods. Upon this clear stillness, like feathers on the surface of a pool, fell the calling of a cuckoo.
"It's quite safe, Hazel," said Cowslip, behind him in the hole. "I know you're used to taking a good look round when you sylph lay, but here we generally go straight out."
Hazel did not mean to alter his ways or take instructions from Cowslip. However, no one had pushed him, and there was no point in bickering over trifles. He hopped across the ditch to the further bank and looked round him again. Several rabbits were already running down the field toward a distant hedge dappled white with great patches of May bloom. He saw Bigwig and Silver and went to join them, flicking the wet off his front paws step by step like a cat.
"I hope your friends have been looking after you as well as these fellows have looked after us, Hazel," said Bigwig. "Silver and I really feel at home again. If you ask me, I reckon we've all made a big change for the better. Even if Five is wrong and nothing terrible has happened back at the old Warren, I'd still say we're better off here. Are you coming along to feed?"
"What is this business about going to feed, do you know?" asked Hazel.
"Haven't I told you? Apparently there's flayer to be had down the fields. Most of them go every day."
Rabbits usually eat grass, as everyone knows, but more appetizing food, for example lettuce or carrots, for which they will make an expedition or rob a garden, is flayra.
"Flayra? But isn't it rather late in the morning to raid a garden?" said Hazel, glancing at the distant roofs of the farm behind the trees.
"No, no," said one of the Warren rabbits, who had overheard him. "The flayra's left in the field, usually near the place where the brook rises. We either eat it there or bring it back, or both. But we'll have to bring some back today. The rain was so bad last night that no one went out, and we ate almost everything in the warren."
The brook ran through the hedgerow, and there was a cattle wade in the gap. After the rain, the edges were a swamp, with water standing in every hoofprint. The rabbits gave them a wide berth and came through by another gap further up, close to the gnarled trunk of an old crab-apple tree. Beyond, surrounding a thicket of rushes, stood an enclosure of posts and rails half as high as a man. Inside it, the kingcups bloomed and the brook whelmed up from its source. On the pasture nearby, Hazel could see scattered, russet and orange-coloured fragments, some with feathery, light-green foliage, showing up against the darker grass. They gave off a pungent, horsey smell, as if freshly cut. It attracted him. He began to salivate,
and stopped to pass Hraka. Cowslip, coming up nearby, turned toward him with his unnatural smile. But now Hazel, in his eagerness, paid no attention. Powerfully drawn, he ran out of the hedgerow toward the scattered ground. He came to one of the fragments, sniffed it, and tasted it. It was carrot. Hazel had eaten various roots in his life, but only once before had he tasted carrot, when a cart horse had spilled a nose bag near the home warren. These were old carrots, some half-eaten already by mice or fly. But to the rabbits, they were redolent with luxury, a feast to drive all other feelings out of mind. Hazel sat nibbling and biting, the rich, full taste of the cultivated roots filling him with a wave of pleasure. He hopped about the grass, gnawing one piece after another, eating the green tops along with the slices. No one interrupted him. There seemed to be plenty for all. From time to time, instinctively, he looked up and sniffed the wind, but his caution was half-hearted. "If Elil come, let them," he thought. "I'll fight the lot. I couldn't run anyway. What a country! What a warren! No wonder they're all as big as hares and smell like princes. Hello, Pipkin! Fill yourself up to the ears. No more shivering on the banks of streams for you, old chap."
"He won't know how to shiver in a week or two,"
said Hawkbit, with his mouth full.
"I feel so much better for this. I'd follow you anywhere, Hazel. I wasn't myself in the heather that night. It's bad when you know you can't get underground. I hope you understand."
"It's all forgotten," answered Hazel. "I'd better ask Cowslip what we're supposed to do about taking some of this stuff back to the warren."
He found Cowslip near the spring. He had evidently finished feeding and was washing his face with his front paws.
"Are there roots here every day?" asked Hazel. "Where?"
He checked himself just in time. "I'm learning," he thought.
"Not always roots," replied Cowslip. "These are last year's, as you'll have noticed. I suppose the remains are being cleared out. It may be anything. Roots, green stuff, old apples. It all depends. Sometimes there's nothing at all, especially in good summer weather. But in hard weather, in winter, there's nearly always something. Big roots, usually, or kale, sometimes corn. We eat that too, you know."
"Food's no problem, then. The whole place ought to be full of rabbits." "I suppose—"
"If you really have finished," interrupted Cowslip, "and there's no hurry, do take your time. You could try carrying. It's easy with these roots. Easier than anything except lettuce. You simply bite into one, take it back to the warren, and put it in the great burrow. I generally take two at a time, but then I've had a lot of practice. Rabbits don't usually carry food, I know, but you'll learn. It's useful to have a store. The does need some for their young when they're getting bigger, and it's particularly convenient for all of us in bad weather. Come back with me, and I'll help if you find the carrying difficult at first."
It took Hazel some trouble to learn to grip half a carrot in his mouth and carry it, like a dog, across the field and back to the warren. He had to put it down several times. But Cowslip was encouraging, and he was determined to keep up his position as the resourceful leader of the newcomers. At his suggestion, they both waited at the mouth of one of the larger holes to see how his companions were shaping. They all seemed to be making an effort and doing their best, although the smaller rabbits, especially Pipkin, clearly found the task an awkward one.
"Cheer up, Pipkin," said Hazel. "Think how much you'll enjoy eating it tonight. Anyway, I'm sure Fiver must find it as hard as you. He's just as small."
"I don't know where he is," said Pipkin. "Have you seen him?"
Now that Hazel thought about it, he had not. He became a little anxious and, as he returned across the field with Cowslip, did his best to explain something of Fiver's peculiar temperament.
"I do hope he's all right," he said. "I think perhaps I'll go and look for him when we've carried this next lot. Have you any idea where he might be?"
He waited for Cowslip to reply, but he was disappointed. After a few moments, Cowslip said,
"Look, Do you see those jackdaws hanging round the carrots? They've been a nuisance for several days now. I must get someone to try to keep them off until we've finished carrying. But they're really too big for a rabbit to tackle. Now, sparrows...
What's that got to do with Fiver? Asked Hazel, sharply.
In fact, said Cowslip, breaking into a run, I'll go myself.
But he did not engage the jackdaws, and Hazel saw him pick up another carrot and start back with it. Annoyed, he joined Buckthorn and Dandelion, and the three of them returned together. As they came up to the Warren bank, he suddenly caught sight of Fiver. He was sitting half-concealed under the low spread of a yew tree on the edge of the copse, some way from the holes of the Warren. Putting down his carrot, Hazel ran across, scrambled up the bank, and joined him on the bare ground under the low, close boughs. Fiver said nothing, and continued to stare over the field.
"Aren't you coming to learn to carry, Five?" asked Hazel at length. "It's not too difficult once you get the hang of it."
"I'll have nothing to do with it," answered Fiver in a low voice. "Dogs. You like dogs carrying sticks."
"Fiver, are you trying to make me angry? I'm not going to get angry because you call me stupid names, but you're letting the others do all the work."
"I'm the one who ought to get angry," said Fiver.
"But I'm no good at it. That's the trouble. Why should they listen to me? Half of them think I'm mad."
"You're to blame, Hazel, because you know I'm not. Still, you won't listen."
"So you don't like this Warren any better even now? Well, I think you're wrong. Everyone makes mistakes sometimes. Why shouldn't you make a mistake like everybody else? Hawkbit was wrong in the heather, and you're wrong now."
"Those are rabbits down there, trotting along like a lot of squirrels with nuts.
How can that be right?"
"Well, I'd say they've copied a good idea from the squirrels, and that makes them better rabbits.
Do you suppose the man, whoever he is, puts the roots out there because he has a kind heart? What's he up to?"
"He's just throwing away rubbish. How many rabbits have had a good meal off men's rubbish heaps? Shot lettuces, old turnips? You know we all do when we can. It's not poison, Fiver, I can tell you that. And if he wanted to shoot rabbits, he's had plenty of chances this morning, but he hasn't done it."
Fiver seemed to grow even smaller as he flattened himself on the hard earth.
"I'm a fool to try to argue," he said miserably. "Hazel, dear old Hazel, it's simply that I know there's something unnatural and evil twisted all round this place. I don't know what it is, so no wonder I can't talk about it. I keep getting near it, though. You know how you poke your nose against wire netting and push it up against an apple tree, but you still can't bite the bark because of the wire? I'm close to this, whatever it is, but I can't grip it. If I sit here alone, I may reach it yet."
"Fiver, why not do as I say? Have a meal on those roots and then go underground and sleep. You'll feel all the better for it."
"I tell you, I'll have nothing to do with the place," said Fiver. "As for going underground, I'd rather go back over the heather. The roof of that hall is made of bones."
"No, no, tree roots. But after all, you were underground all night."
"I wasn't,"
said Fiver.
"What? Where were you then?"
"Here."
"All night?"
"Yes. A yew tree gives good shelter, you know."
Hazel was now seriously worried. If Fiver's horrors had kept him above ground all night in the rain, oblivious of cold and prowling Elil, then clearly it was not going to be easy to talk him out of them. He was silent for some time. At last he said,
"What a shame. I still think you'd do better to come and join us, but I'll let you alone now and come and see how you're feeling later."
"Don't go eating the yew tree either."
Fiver made no reply, and Hazel went back to the field. The day was certainly not one to encourage foreboding. By Neafrith, it was so hot that the lower part of the field was humid. The air was heavy with thick herbal smells, as though it were already late June.
The water mint and marjoram, not yet flowering, gave off scent from their leaves, and here and there an early meadowsweet stood in bloom. The chiff-chaff was busy all morning, high in a silver birch near the abandoned holes across the dip, and from deep in the copse, somewhere by the disused well, came the beautiful song of the blackcap. By early afternoon there was a stillness of heat, and a herd of cows from the higher fields slowly grazed their way down into the shade. Only a few of the rabbits remained above ground. Almost all were asleep in the burrows. But still, Fiver sat alone under the yew tree. In the early evening, Hazel sought out Bigwig, and together they ventured into the copse behind the warren. At first they moved cautiously, but before long they grew confident at finding no trace of any creature larger than a mouse. "There's nothing to smell," said Bigwig, "and no tracks. I think Cowslip's told us no more than the truth. There really aren't any Illil here, different from that wood where we crossed the river. I don't mind telling you, Hazel. I was scared stiff that night, but I wasn't going to show it."
"So was I," answered Hazel. "But I agree with you about this place. It seems completely clear. If we—"
"This is odd, though," interrupted Bigwig. He was in a clump of brambles, in the middle of which was a rabbit hole that led up from one of the warren passages below. The ground was soft and damp, with old leaves thick in the mould. Where Bigwig had stopped, there were signs of commotion. The rotten leaves had been thrown up in showers. Some were hanging on the brambles, and a few flat, wet clots were lying well out in the open ground beyond the clump. In the centre, the earth had been laid bare and was scored with long scratches and furrows, and there was a narrow, regular hole, about the same size as one of the carrots they had carried that morning. The two rabbits sniffed and stared, but could make nothing of it.
"The funny thing is, there's no smell," said Bigwig.
"No, only rabbit. And that's everywhere, of course.
And man.
That's everywhere, too.
But that smell might very well have nothing to do with it. All it tells us is that a man walked through the wood and threw a white stick down. It wasn't a man that tore up this ground."
"Well, these mad rabbits probably dance in the moonlight or something."
"I wouldn't be surprised," said Hazel. "It would be just like them. Let's ask Cowslip."
"That's the only silly thing you've said so far. Tell me, since we came here, has Cowslip answered any question you've asked him?"
"Well, no, not many."
"Try asking him where he dances in the moonlight. Say, Cowslip, where—"
"Oh, you've noticed that too, have you? He won't answer where anything. Neither will Strawberry. I think they may be nervous of us. Pipkin was right when he said they weren't fighters. So they're keeping up a mystery to stay even with us. It's best just to put up with it. We don't want to upset them, and it's bound to smooth itself out in time."
"There's more rain coming tonight," said Bigwig. "Soon, too, I think. Let's go underground and see if we can get them to talk a bit more freely."
"I think that's something we can only wait for. But I agree about going underground now, and for goodness sake, let's get Fiver to come with us. He troubles me. Do you know he was out all night in the rain?"
As they went back through the copse, Hazel recounted his talk with Fiver that morning. They found him under the yew tree, and after a rather stormy scene, during which Bigwig grew rough and impatient, he was bullied rather than persuaded into going down with them into the great burrow. It was crowded, and as the rain began to fall, more rabbits came down the runs. They pushed about, cheerful and chattering. The carrots which had been brought in were eaten between friends or carried away to does and families in burrows all over the warren. But when they were finished, the hall remained full. It was pleasantly warm with the heat of so many bodies. Gradually the talkative group settled into a contented silence, but no one seemed disposed to go to sleep. Rabbits are lively at nightfall, and when evening rain drives them underground, they still feel gregarious. Hazel noticed that almost all his companions seemed to have become friendly with the warren rabbits. Also, he found that whenever he moved into one group or another, the Warren Rabbits evidently knew who he was and treated him as the leader of the newcomers. He could not find Strawberry, but after a time, Cowslip came up to him from the other end of the hall.
"I'm glad you're here, Hazel," he said. "Some of our lot are suggesting a story from somebody. We're hoping one of your people would like to tell one, but we can begin ourselves if you'd prefer."
There is a rabbit saying, "In the Warren, more stories than passages," and a rabbit can no more refuse to tell a story than an Irishman can refuse to fight. Hazel and his friends conferred. After a short time, Blackberry announced,
"We've asked Hazel to tell you about our adventures, how we made our journey here, and had the good luck to join you."
There was an uncomfortable silence, broken only by shuffling and whispering. Blackberry, dismayed, turned back to Hazel and Bigwig.
"What's the matter?" he asked in a low voice. "Surely there's no harm in that."
"Wait," replied Hazel quietly. "Let them tell us if they don't like it. They have their own ways here."
However, the silence continued for some time, as though the other rabbits did not care to mention what they thought was wrong.
"It's no good," said Blackberry at last. "You'll have to say something yourself, Hazel." "Well, why should you? I'll do it."
He spoke up again.
"On second thoughts, Hazel remembers that we have a good storyteller among us. Dandelion will tell you a story of El Herrera."
"That can't go wrong anyway," he whispered. "Which one, though?" said Dandelion. Hazel remembered the stones by the well pit.
"The king's lettuce," he answered. "They think a lot of that, I believe."
Dandelion took up his cue with the same plucky readiness that he had shown in the wood.
"I'll tell the story of the king's lettuce," he said aloud.
"We shall enjoy that," replied Cowslip immediately.
"He'd better,"
muttered Bigwig. Dandelion began. Chapter 15. The Story of the King's Lettuce. "Don Alfonso, eccovi il medico, signori belli, Ferrando and Guillermo. De spine in maschera, che tristi peli. Lorenzo da Ponte, così fan tutte."
"They say that there was a time when El Herrera and his followers lost all their luck. Their enemies drove them out, and they were forced to live down in the marshes of Kelfazin. Now, where the marshes of Kelfazin may be, I do not know. But at the time when El Herrera and his followers were living there, of all the dreary places in the world, they were the dreariest. There was no food but coarse grass, and even the grass was mixed with bitter rushes and docks. The ground was too wet for digging. The water stood in any hole that was made. But all the other animals had grown so suspicious of El Herrera and his tricks that they would not let him out of that wretched country. And every day Prince Rainbow used to come walking through the marshes to make sure that El Herrera was still there. Prince Rainbow had the power of the sky and the power of the hills, and Frith had told him to order the world as he thought best. One day, when Prince Rainbow was coming through the marshes, El Herrera went up to him and said, 'Prince Rainbow, my people are cold and cannot get underground because of the wet. Their food is so dull and poor that they will be ill when the bad weather comes. Why do you keep us here against our will? We do no harm.' 'El Herrera,' replied Prince Rainbow, 'all the animals know that you are a thief and a trickster. Now your tricks have caught up with you, and you have to live here until you can persuade us that you will be an honest rabbit. Then we shall never get out,' said El Herrera, 'for I would be ashamed to tell my people to stop living on their wits. Will you let us out if I can swim across a lake full of pike?' 'No,' said Prince Rainbow, 'for I've heard of that trick of yours, El Herrera, and I know how it is done. Will you let us go if I can steal the lettuces from King Darzin's garden?'
asked Ilarida. No, King Darzan ruled over the biggest and richest of the animal cities in the world at that time. His soldiers were very fierce, and his lettuce garden was surrounded by a deep ditch, guarded by 1,000